Hi, it's KCCK's Culture Crawl. I'm Dennis Green, and my guests today are from an upcoming world premiere production at Riverside Theater. Kathleen Johnston from Riverside is here. Kathleen, mm-hmm. Nice to see you again. Welcome.
Yeah, good to see you.
And the playwright, the star, and the only actor in Herein Lies the Truth, Aaron Pang, is with us too. Aaron, welcome.
Hi. It's very nice to be here.
I said before we started, I love it when we have the playwright. Sure. I love it when we have the actor, and I'm always intrigued with a one person show.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that as we as we go along. But Aaron, I'm just going to start kind of by asking you the open ended. How did this come about? Your story has been, you are a part of Hancher's Infinite Dream mm-hmm. Festival. You've been on The Moth. You've had several other appearances as well.
Yeah.
Tell me the genesis of Herein Lies the Truth.
Sure, I think. I'm a third year MFA student at the nonfiction writing program at Iowa, and I came to Iowa to write this story. I knew that this was a story I wanted to write, this story about my becoming disabled, about my journey to find love and intimacy and finding just how to do this thing that everyone else wants to do, but with a added challenge or kind of, just a secondary factor, right? And I think that, yeah, it started mainly because storytelling and being on a stage by myself is what I'm most comfortable with. But then it, through like kind of all of the education of the grad program, like the master's, I was able to really formulate my own like idea around how I wanted the story to exactly look like, to push past the tropes of what like a lot of disabled stories look like and to tell the story in its truest form, or at least as close to the truth as I can get it to, right? Because I wanted to be able to represent kind of the common and true experiences of like disabled life. And that's a lot of the goal, at least when it came to be. How it came to be, I don't know. It's just you sit around and you write and then you procrastinate and then... And then sometimes, you know, you go to an open mic to test out some jokes and then you slowly start to cobble it together and move things around.
And then there's a deadline.
No, it's usually when you're like, I have to turn something in or else I'm not going to graduate. Then things start to get produced. Yeah.
So I know you've worked in the tech sector as well. So have you always been an actor, comedian, monologuist, or did this come about, you know, after your injury and wanting to tell this story?
As my mom says, it's like you've been a ham your entire life, right? It's like, it's that funny thing where it's like public speaking has always been a strength of mine. I was like literally on the drive over with Kathleen, we were talking about how I did like speech and debate in high school, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like I've lived in like the varieties of performance from my childhood, which was like singing and being in a choir and then going into like college, which I was like part of an a cappella group and I did speech and debate. It was you get to move through a lot. And then when you're in like corporate America, like I was like an engineer, but I was an engineer who can like speak, right?
So you were the one who always picked to do presentations so to the
like,
board.
Yeah, everyone's like, Aaron can explain some stuff without like losing everybody to like a nice nap. So that became a big job of mine. And so selling and that type of engaging someone, engaging audiences at all levels, just like is a big part of just who I am.
And then you were injured.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, when did you decide that this was going to be, you know, grist for your performing mill and that you really wanted to get this story out there?
I think, the joke that I always say, which is not a joke, was like, I didn't want to go to therapy. Instead, I decided to like make everyone my therapist by just like getting on stage and telling the story. I think for a lot of disabled people who become disabled in adulthood, it's trying to align two images of yourself, right? It's a new image of your disabled self and your old image of yourself that was not disabled, right? And trying to be like, these two stories now don't match. And because I was like comfortable with telling stories, it was an attempt. These stories became the bridge. This story became the bridge of how I connected who I used to be and what I was used to be able to do and things along those lines to who I am now, because inevitably they're like the same person, right? But then sometimes you have to understand yourself as story or as like a story you tell yourself. And like this, like in the writing of it all, there's been so much revision, right? And you start to conceive of yourself differently through the revisions itself. And sometimes you change it because you think the audience won't react in the way you want. And then sometimes you change it because you're like, oh, that isn't actually how I want to tell the story of becoming injured, the story of it, of X, Y, or Z. And you start to make those changes, and that's sometimes just for yourself. And that's been a really rewarding part of like this writing process.
Well, you know, it sounds really heavy when you tell it like this.
Sure.
But I also know that it's not.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, like you said, you've tried parts of this out at, you know, open mics nights and stand up comedy. So obviously you've learned to tell this story, with a light humorous touch too, even though it's serious stuff.
I have to say, having gotten to watch a couple of runs of it so far, I left and told my friends and husband, like, I have not laughed that much in a full show in as long as I can remember. It is like constant humor. And that's not what you anticipate going into a show about disability, right? Going, I can't wait to laugh through this whole thing. But it's a beautiful way you tell it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another part of like trying to tell holistic stories, right? Where it's like, you know, it's like disabled people laugh, you know, right? Like that's like you say it out loud and then everyone's like, oh yeah, I guess that is true, right? But then it's like, again, we have our own conceptions of what this experience looks like. And I think that, it's like, I love telling extremely dark jokes about things, right? Or just there are extremely funny scenarios. Like my moth story is about, you know, it literally sounds like a beginning of a joke. It's like a pregnant woman, a like old man, and a disabled man with a cane, me, walk into a train, and there's only like there's only two accessible seats. Like who's the most deserving, right? Like it's just this like it feels like a Seinfeld episode. It feels just like it feels like pure comedy, and you're just like, this is my life, and it's both very funny and also a little bit sad and like very complicated. And I think that's like that. There's joy in these weird moments in which you're just like, oh yeah, like the original stories that we tell about disabled people don't factor into these moments that are really funny and complicated and silly and stupid.
So you've been working on this story for a while.
Yeah.
Moth, and of course you talked about workshopping it, you know, in different places. And then you performed as part of the Hancher thing last fall. Now you're, you know, this is a play.
It's not
a monologue anymore. Yeah. It's not a stand-up routine. It's a play with a director. Yeah. So now you've got other people, you know, kind of taking ownership of how you tell the story. Tell me about that process, especially working with Johanna directing you in this.
Yeah, Johanna's been amazing, right? And it's been this really interesting process ever since, like, it was like random coffee with Adam Knight, who runs Riverside Theater, and a random coffee with Johanna, where all of my collaborators have, Johanna uses the phrase where she's like, I'm trying to midwife this piece, right? And she knows that I'm in the end making most of the creative calls, and anything that she's trying to enable all of my instincts and assets, and knowing, playing to my strengths. And that's just been a really great process of when everyone enters knowing that they are trying to help me as opposed to change the thing inherently to something else. And that has been really comforting, right? To know that I'm trying to tell a story in a different way, right? Trying to tell a story in a way that doesn't, that challenges the audience in the way they think. And I think the creative team has been really helpful with that. Speaking of, but like on the same note, it's like I don't know anything about lighting design. I don't know anything about set design, and it's, they have been so amazing. The Riverside team and Joanna have been so amazing, kind of giving me options, right? I'm part of every single decision made, and they are like, here, take a look at this or take a look at that. And that type of optioning, like, I have a lot of opinions, right? Like, I will always have a lot of opinions, but it's, they make giving those opinions really, like, safe and freeing, and they give you options and make them easier, right? As opposed to being like, you come up with your own idea. They're like, here's some ideas. Yeah. Like, or tell us a vibe, and then they come at me with ideas, and that creative process has been really, really valuable.
Because, you know, the piece, the play centers around your disability. There's a question I don't normally ask somebody doing a one-person show is it physically taxing?
Yeah.
Did you have to make accommodations for I gotta be up on stage by myself for an hour and a half. I'm going to have to figure out ways to make that work with my body.
Yeah. I mean, we think about that all the time, right? And I think that that's been a really amazing process of taking the time to be intentional, right? Before we even get onto the stage, right? Every rehearsal starts with a body check, right? Every rehearsal starts with how much pain you're in. We use the quintessential hospital 0 to 10 pain scale, right? And it's like bad days, we go above 6, we just start lying down, we cut rehearsals short. And then it's like, and that becomes, it becomes cognizant, right? Because this experience is such an embodied experience. And I don't just do it with me. We do it with everyone on the team. Everyone comes, like the other day, I was feeling fine, but our stage manager took like a huge fall in the Starbucks parking lot, right? And she was all scraped up and she was just telling us about it. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like, it's sometimes good to know just these things. And when you're in a space with someone, to feel that. When it comes to the work itself, we also try to be, it's actually balancing both artistic aspirations and physical capability, right? There's moments where I walk without my cane and without my leg brace. It is more difficult, but there's a part in which I want the audience to see what it looks like when I walk around my house by myself, right? And I have a stage to show them. And it might be uncomfortable. It might be a little like you watch me teeter a little bit. And there's both dramatic risk where we create like theatrical risk, but there's also a very real risk of me falling. And I think that secondary part is that our team has plans in place of what happens in those moments, right? And so that is, like, again, it's funny because I'm, like, thinking about it, and I was like, this sounds heavy, but it isn't, because it's there's this, like, very delightful, everyone's talking about it practically, as opposed to about it being like, oh, no, you can't do this thing, or everyone's talking about, like, if you fall, what do we do? And that feels really refreshing, because that's how I talk about it. Like, I have to, you know, if I fall in the middle, like, if I fall in the hallway coming here, it's like, I'm going to have to figure it out, right? It's not just being like, well, I'm never going to walk in a hallway again. Hmm. And so, and the team's been really helpful with that piece.
It's a world premiere. The play is called Herein Lies the Truth. Opens April 18th, yes? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and runs for 2 weekends. Mm. And the first weekend especially, I mean, make it to any show you can. But we have 2 really exciting talkback opportunities that I think delve even more into some of the things we've touched on here. Both the Saturday night performance on the 20th, after the show is done, audiences will be able to stay and listen to Aaron as well as Andre Perry, who is on his thesis, is one of his thesis advisors, and a few other advisors kind of talk about that whole process. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday, the first Sunday, we often get Miriam Gilbert, who's a professor emeritus at the university, speaking to Aaron and Johanna about the real theatricality of it and that transition. So we hope to see as many people there.
Well, it sounds, like I said, sounds heavy, but it isn't. I really looking forward to getting to, you know, hear your full story. And Thank you so much for coming in today, Aaron. I appreciate it. Good luck with it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kathleen, thank you, too.
Yeah, good to see you.
Again, Riverside Theater's world premiere, Herein Lies the Truth, opens April 18th. And again, Kathleen, if people want tickets, how do they get them?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to riversidetheater.org to get tickets, or you're welcome to call our box office or stop in as well. Lots of ways to get in.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can hear The Culture Crawl live on the radio many weekdays at 10:30, or download the podcast at kcck.org/culture. Watch the videos on Facebook or YouTube. Our producer is Lydia Kilgore. I'm Dennis Green. I'll talk to you later.